Good morning, everyone. It is 9:02, and we're going to call the City Council meeting to order. Dallas is unlike any other city. It's a unique gem of unparalleled cultural abundance, experiences, and visions. And today I have the pleasure to introduce Rabbi Knight, Asher Knight, with Temple Emmanuel. If you'll please stand for the invocation.
Good morning. Let us pray. Eloheinu v'Elohei Avotenu v'Imotenu, our God and God of our fathers and our mothers. God, you stood by our ancestors during periods of great challenge, times of famine, of persecution, and economic recession. God, your eternal presence gave our ancestors the strength and fortitude to move forward and to make tough choices. With your support, our ancestors had the audacity to hope. They had the boldness to envision a world as it ought to be, instead of cynically mirroring the brokenness of the world in which they live. As the stewards and shepherds of our city, our new mayor and council members know what it is like to feel alone in their work, to feel like they are making slow progress on the major challenges of today, to feel that they labor in vain. So God, we ask of you, guide our elected officials and all who help to work with them, as you did our ancestors. Guide them to know that they are not alone. With faith in you, O God, may our council have the audacity to hope. And may they have the confidence and the capacity of our citizens to understand, to discern, and work together toward the vision of our city as it ought to be. May our new mayor and the council continue to build relationships and trust in one another and the citizens of our city. And through their relationships and trust, may we all work with one another to help repair and transform our city. O God, may our new mayor and this council use their strengths and skills for honorable purposes. May your radiant presence support them and encourage them to always use their roles as leaders for blessing. And may you grant our city most important blessings of all, the blessings of shalom, of peace, and of shleimut, of home. Together we say, Amen.
We have some special presentations this morning, and we will start with Councilwoman Delia Hasso.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and get started. We have a little video to show you. And I don't know if many of my colleagues know or our people out in the audience know that there was a show called Police Women of Dallas. Yes. And it was a cable show, and it highlighted four of our Dallas police women and what they do on a daily basis and how they handle career and children and crime in the city of Dallas. And as we all know, we're very pleased that it's 15% down. Okay, they're not here yet. I do want to tell you that it was a favorite show of my daughter's, who is now away back at college in Virginia. So she wanted the police women to know that she's taking a double major in criminal justice before she leaves college. I don't know. they're here. Okay, let me go ahead and get started. The police... Benny, is the video ready?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead and do the video, then we'll do the announcement.
On this season of Police Women of Dallas.
Round and round!
Let's go!
Okay, Linebacker.
There's about
away from me.
You never know what's going to happen, like what's going to happen today.
Television program that is aired on the Learning Channel and is available in 98 million homes in the U.S. and nearly 8 million homes in Canada, allowing the essence and vitality of our rich, diverse city to be aired across the country. The women of the Dallas Police Department are as diverse and dynamic as the 1.3 million people they serve in the ninth largest city in our nation. The Police Women of Dallas, Sergeant Tracy Jones, come on up. Corporal Melissa Person, Officer Sarah Kara Beth Burnside, Officer Sarah Ramsey, and Officer Mia Shigena. Much like their 3,600 fellow officers, have demonstrated the highest levels of professionalism and excellence. The Women of DPD has a positive influence on women across the country and has allowed them to see the reality of women in policing, proving that in a male-dominant profession, they can succeed and accomplish any task as their male counterparts. Now, therefore, I and the Mayor of the City of Dallas, Duane Caraway, and on behalf of the Dallas City Council, do hereby give special recognition to the Police Women of Dallas for enhancing the visibility of women in the law enforcement and advancing the image of the Dallas Police Department. Here we go. Come on up, girls. We have two out of the four. Burnside, come on up. And
Melissa Person.
Recognized by the people out there. We're just out there doing our jobs, but for people to look at us and say that they think we're kind of a TV star, but we're actually just doing what we do every day and just get to show the public what we actually do on a daily basis and that we have another side, our families at home as well. So that's nice.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Ms. Hazza, before you go, there are some remarks.
Sure.
Councilman Allen. I was going to say, I truly did enjoy watching the show, but I enjoyed your professionalism, your caring. It's for us to even as you're driving around and we're noticing the landmarks and stuff. But it went right back to your professionalism and your caring, and it really came across. I truly, truly, truly looked forward for it to coming on TV like that. So hats off to y'all. Y'all did Dallas well. You did Dallas well. Proud of you.
Thank you, Ms. Allen. Mr. Cadet.
Yeah, I'd like to say the same thing Jerry said. Is you all do. You do a great job. You're an asset. The city of Dallas. Let me tell you a little story. Jerry and I, we love going out to the police academy. And he and I were out there one day, and we were going around, and they were in their room doing their exercises, practicing, and in the gym. And I went up to your instructor and I said, hey, I said, all these guys pretty good, right? She said, oh, yeah. And I'm a big guy. I said, you think they want them to take me down? And I did. I said, okay. I said, you do? Okay.
And I went over there and grabbed his coat and took his glasses off of him. He was ready to go.
Jerry said, give me your coat and glasses. And I said, but wait a minute. It has to be a woman.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody started chanting, Mason, Mason, Mason. And I said, uh-oh, I'm in trouble. Because evidently she's a little fireball. And she came up and I said, now, I said, I'm just going to act like I'm bad. Now, you be easy with me. But she said, okay. And she didn't know what to do. I mean, she's going to get me. And instructor just told her what to do. Do such and such and such. And I got there and I said, oh, I said, you think you're bad, don't you? You don't even have a gun. Boy, and she came. And she did. She twisted me, turned me, and I said, now don't put me on the ground. She's fixing to flip my legs. And I'll tell you, you all are very well trained.
I told her to call 911.
Yeah, I said, Jerry, watch out for me. But that was really neat what you guys were able to do. And thank you so much for your service. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, come on.
Very good.
As Councilmember Condane, I just want to say a special thank you to you because I went through a very difficult time in my career, and you helped me out. So thank you for this.
Thank you all for your service. Councilmember Sunil Atkins,
home for the holidays.
Part two. I guess this is part two, home for the holidays. We had so many different sponsors on the home for the holiday last year, and someone could not be here in the past, but some are here today. First, is anybody from Dr. Bailey is here? No. Okay, home for the holidays started about 4 years ago in District 8, and what we're going to do is go to each rec zone. And we invite the community out. Last year, we had one of the largest gatherings in the history of Home for the Holidays. We had over 700 people. We have over 38 families that we supported, and those families were sponsored by the different people at the City of Dallas and different corporations. Let's go to Katrina Petrie of Skyline Ranch, which come forward. And also Johnny Keene, representing Kroger's. You come forward, please. And Madrano, Pauline, you want to do something with South Texas Dental. But also South Texas Dental, if someone, Dr. Keene, Jesse. Dr. Parker, Chad Parker, and Dr. Jesse. And Jesse Wright. Okay. You know, first, you know, Home for the Holidays, it's a great pleasure that when Christmas comes around, that most people forget one thing about, you know, always trying to give, and it also about receiving also. So for many, many years that we have some great sponsors who always love to give back to the community, and these people, especially Southwest Dillon, always give back to the community. And that's a great thing in this hard time, in a tight budget time, that when you have someone giving passionately out of their heart constantly. I have a special rec for Kroger's. Before I ask the fourth annual Home for the Holiday, the Adopted Family Drive took place on December 14, 2010, at the City Hall in the Flag Room for those adopted families in District 8 community. 38 families with a total of 120 children were adopted by various departments within the City of Dallas Company Corporation. Kroger store donated $25 gift cards to each of the families adopted.
were attending at the home adopted family gift day. The gift card was an additional bonus to the family. Whereas the contributors of the Kroger store threw in kind support, added to the celebration, and gave the family the opportunity to have a happy holiday season. Whereas the benefits your community will devise from the fourth annual Home for a Holiday Adopted Family Drive would most certainly extend well beyond one season gave to Dollar Family Hope. Now, Jeremiah Chanel Act on behalf of Dallas City Council, and I'm going to say this based at marathon level as of January 19th, in the whole entire city kind of heard by stand a special recognition to Kroger. We've done it, King, so want to set up the world on behalf of Kroger.
Thank you, Councilman. It has been my company's pleasure to work at Kroger for over 15 years and doing work in the southern sector of Dallas. We advise them, we get involved, and on behalf of Kroger, we certainly want to express appreciation for this. Thank you.
Jess from South Texas, gentlemen, you might want to say something. You want to say something, Jess?
I just want to say thank you for the opportunity allowing us to give back to the communities. We always enjoy Home for the Holidays. It's a great event. We look forward to continuing our efforts to help you.
Also, Miss Petrie with Skyline Ranch, she always gives each year, and she also gives with a passion. And you want to say something, Petrie?
I just want to say thank you so much for the opportunity and on behalf of Skyline Ranch, the staff, his volunteer staff out there as well, and my husband, Robert Petrie, who also plays an interesting role in this. Thank you.
Colleen Madrona, you want to do something special?
Thank you, Councilmember Atkins. I wanted to just tag along here, but to say a very special thank you to the dedication and the leadership and the commitment to the community, to South Texas Dental, Dr. Chad Park, and Jesse Vegalado that we all know, their commitment to educate our children for oral hygiene is so important. And they not only contributed here for Home for the Holidays, but also they have demonstrated true leadership and dedication for the last 8 years of the Holiday in the Park, the South Texas Dental Backpack Drive. They helped 500 children last August obtain their backpacks and then filled them up with toothpaste and toothbrushes. They also helped the mayor's annual Passport to Health. They called, and you know, no one had to ask them. They called and said, "We want to participate," and so they also participated in that. So with that, we want to make sure that we thank Dr. Chad Park for his leadership, Jesse Vegalado for always being in the community, always promoting dental oral health to our children, which is so important because we know that that's either number one or number two reason why children miss school. So on behalf of the city council and Mr. Atkins and the mayor, we want to say thank you for always being there when we need you and for always offering up your service to our city and especially to our future. So thank you very much. Mr. Dr. Park, if you'd like to come and say a few words.
Councilman Madrona and Councilman Atkins, it's actually us that needs to thank you. You know, as dentists and dental offices, you know, we can give back so much to the community just as far as toothbrushes and screenings and things like that, but it's actually the functions that you guys hold and invite us to that really allows us to give back even more. Give back in ways where the kids can actually appreciate some of the things. I mean, yeah, you give a toothbrush and they're like, gee, thanks. But when we're able to get to the back bicycles and things like that, I think they really appreciate it even more. So, again, thank you for inviting us, and we will continue to support you in all those things. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Council. Sure.
Thank you. Mr. Cadane?
Thank you, Ms. Atkins.
Now, 2011 marks the 100th anniversary of the White Rock Lake today. White Rock Lake is an urban oasis that is enjoyed by over 2 million visitors every year and is recognized as one of the park system's crown jewels. In fact, I used to fish out at White Rock Lake, and I used to catch some pretty good-sized catfish off that pier over by the spillway. That's a true story. White Rock Lake is one of Dallas's most scenic signature parks and is free and open to all and offers a wide variety of outdoor activities, including hike and bike trails, sailing, rowing, dog parks, bird watching areas, numerous scenic picnic areas, playgrounds, athletic facilities, rental facilities, fishing, and fishing piers. I would like to recognize Councilman Chevy Cadane, who has appointed a committee of Dallas citizens and the lake stakeholders, co-chaired by Darren Borup and Rena Morris, to plan, coordinate, and oversee more than 20 different events and activities related to Core America White Rock Lake Centennial Celebration through the corporations of 20 different groups, including the City of Dallas Park and Recreation Department, the Dallas Water Utilities, and Dallas Police Department. Councilman Cadet.
Thank you, Mayor. He's telling the truth about the fishing.
That's right.
My grandmother said they used to throw catfish away because they couldn't eat it all. They caught out of there. But anyway, it's a fantastic lake, and it's used by the entire city of Dallas. Darren, if you and Rena would come up and come with them. Is Willis here?
Here's Willis.
Willis, where are you? Come on up, Willis. Willis is part of this, I'll tell you. Without our park department and their help, I'll tell you, we'd be in trouble. But I'm going to tell you what, we've got two folks here, Rena and Darren, and when I called on them to do this, I didn't actually realize how big it was going to be. But they did, and Darren, being on the park board, knew really where they were headed. I'll tell you, this couple, this threesome here, has gone well beyond what I've even expected so far, and they're just getting started. They have got a realm of deals going on at the lake that our entire community needs to join us with and come to them. And I think I've given everybody a list of what will be happening and what's going on. And if not, please see me because I'll get it out again. And we need to get it to all of our neighborhoods and let them know when these events will be going on. So, without further ado, I'm going to try to read this, if I can. It's a proclamation. Whereas 2011 marks the 100th anniversary of the completion of White Rock Lake as the city's first major water reservoir. Whereas in December 29th, the city council transferred the responsibility of the land surrounding White Rock Lake Park and Recreation Department officially denoted White Rock Lake as a park. And whereas National Park Service prepared a master plan for White Rock Lake in 1935, and whereas the Civilian Conservation Corps established camp number 2896 at White Rock Lake in 1935, implemented significant improvements to the park between 1935 and 1943. Whereas White Rock Lake was served with citizens of Dallas over the past century as a water source and a major recreation amenity. And whereas today White Rock Lake is an urban oasis that is enjoyed by over 2 million visitors a year and is recognized as one of the crown jewels of the Dallas park system.
whereas White Rock Lake is one of Dallas's signature parks, free and open to all, offers a wide variety of outdoor activities, including hiking, biking trails, sailing, rowing, dog park, bird watching areas, numerous scenic picnic areas, playgrounds, athletic facilities, rental facilities, fishing piers. Whereas District 9, City Council member Sheffy Cadane has appointed a committee of Dallas citizens and lake stockholders, co-chaired by Darren Boyce and Rena Morris, to plan, coordinate, and oversee more than 20 different events, activities related to the Tow America White Rock Lake Centennial Celebration through the cooperation of 20 different groups, including the City of Dallas Park and Recreation Department, the Dallas Water Utilities, Dallas Police Department, whereas Abby Holiday, the city's iconic realtor and former Park and Recreation Board member, who also will celebrate her 100th birthday in 2011, has agreed to serve as the honorary chair of the Tow America White Rock Lake Centennial Celebration. Now, therefore, I, Dwayne Caraway, Mayor of the City of Dallas, and on behalf of the Dallas City Council, do hereby proclaim March through June 2011 as Tow America White Rock Lake Centennial Celebration Day in Dallas. Thank you all so much.
Members of the council, we have several speakers.
I got to say one other thing. Councilman Allen has come on board with me and helped me move this forward. So thanks, Jerry, for all that.
Madam Secretary. Mr. Mayor, members of the council, good morning. We have two speakers this morning, first being Lisa Livingstone and Jennifer Land. While Ms. Livingstone is coming forward, let me recite the rules for speaking. Citizens and other visitors attending city council meetings shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the city council. Any person making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the city council, or while attending the city council meetings, shall be removed from the room with the sergeant at arms so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the city council during that session of the city council. You have 3 minutes to speak. You'll see a 30-second amber lighting up here on the board, and then a red light needs to stop. So state your name and your address for the record, please.
My name is Elisa Livingstone. I live at 4207 Live Oak, 75204. I just wanted to come and briefly speak in support of the task force proposed by Angela Hunt to investigate gas drilling in the Dallas area. I wanted to propose that part of this task force go into Texas's and Dallas's capability to regulate and enforce rules set out by Dallas, and recently I heard from the former deputy of the TCEQ recently stated at a town hall meeting in Arlington that of the 3,000 CCEQ enforcement officers. 2,000 are stationed in Austin, and the remaining 1,000 are assigned to safeguard the rest of Texas. Additionally, according to the CCEQ website, there are now 5 air monitors for the 5,000 square miles that the Barnett jail covers. I think public health and safety are of importance to all of us, and I think the fact that you are moving forward with this task force shows that, and we both support it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next Ready, Ms. Mayor?
Mm-hmm.
Our next speaker is Jennifer Land. Get past it to our
Hi, my name is Jennifer Land, and I live at 3905 Weaverne. I want to start by thanking Councilmember Angela Hunt for renewing the call for a gas drilling task force, which is why I'm here today and why I've begun to go door-to-door in my district, and I will go to as many districts as necessary to rally support. I don't know whether I'm more alarmed by the accumulating scientific data that is being reported on a nearly daily basis in the local and national media, or by the council's failure to create a task force to navigate through this data that is beyond its own expertise. As a current graduate student in a Master's of Science program, it's unsettling to me how the existing science on this issue has been minimized during the public discourse, and the responsibility of gathering data has fallen on the backs of citizens. It would be simply indefensible for this council to move forward on such a consequential issue without the input of an expert panel. Yesterday, you were given copies of a New York Times article that exposed how the EPA had been ignoring disturbing data on the extremely elevated levels of radioactive drilling wastewater that continues to be released into drinking water sources across the country. Our local media reported on a neighborhood group that rallied to have their air near a school environmentally tested, which showed a 2-mile carbon disulfide plume emitting from a well a mile away. Sadly, this is hardly the only data being ignored by representatives and gathered by citizens. Regulators and private testing firms have performed air and water quality studies across the country, utilizing evidence-based sampling practice. Isotopic fingerprint testing, which can help fingerprint the source of a contaminant, was used by the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection to confirm that Dimock, Pennsylvania's water supply was contaminated by drilling. The EPA's preliminary isotopic testing in Parker County, Texas, also suggests drilling is responsible for the water contamination there, and yet state regulators refuse to act. In spite of the weight of this evidence, it can be difficult to conclusively determine the source of water contamination without requiring the industry to use tracers in their drilling fluids, which inexplicably regulators don't require the industry to use, even though this would produce irrefutable evidence of water contamination in the event that it would occur. Fortunately, just this past week, State Senator Wendy Davis introduced a bill calling for the requirement of tracers. I ask today how many of you are prepared to discuss the nuances of isotopic testing, compositional water analysis, and the use of tracers? How many of you have prepared a science-based plan for how to get our air into containment, which it's already out of, at the same time as allowing gas drilling, which has been shown to produce as much pollution as all the vehicles on the road? This is a complicated issue that requires a scientific review, and to suggest otherwise would be negligence. And I am willing to bet that as I go door to door, my fellow citizens will agree. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Mayor, that's all of the speakers this morning.
Let me recognize a couple of folks in the audience at this time. A few of our former council members, Council Member Ed Oakley. We appreciate having you here with us, Mr. Oakley. And Council Member Diane Ragsdale is with us, former Mayor Pro Tem, and also Council Member of the Southern Sector, Councilman Al Lipson, Mayor Pro Tem. All right, thank you. Appreciate having you. And Councilman Bob Simpson is walking through the door, former Councilman. Bob, just walk right on back through the door, Bob. Perfect timing. All right, Council, we are going to move for approval. We'll start our regular agenda, move for approval
Mr. Mayor?
Of our minutes.
Mr. Mayor?
Been moved and approved, all in favor? Oh, Ms. Hunt?
Mr. Mayor, I want to address a couple of our speakers, if I may.
Okay, please. Let's reframe, and I'll start that over. Ms. Hunt.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
I wanted to thank Ms. Land and Ms. Livingstone for coming today. And I just wanted to point out to my colleagues, if you haven't had a chance to look at this, the New York Times had a very troubling article relating to hydrofracking this past weekend, and I'll get a copy for everyone, but it related to an investigation that the New York Times had conducted in which they determined that there were many more toxic chemicals present in the wastewater produced by the fracking, and in both the wastewater as well as in the water that eventually goes into our drinking water. And there was both radioactive waste and carcinogenic waste that could not be properly removed by the technology that a number of these wastewater, these plants had for our drinking water. So it was a very troubling article, and I think it's something that we need to take a look at as we move forward. And I hope everyone's had a chance to look at the thoughts I had about moving forward on a task force, and that we can consider that and hopefully move forward expeditiously on it, because we do have the matter coming up in October in which we're going to be evaluating a proposed permit. So hope you'll join me in moving forward on that so that we can ensure that we protect our citizens and that we address any of the environmental and health safety issues in relation to fracking as quickly as possible. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Hunt. Ms. Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Even though I know this is in Mr. Newman's district, I will be, Dave and I talked for a little while yesterday, and I'm hoping that we can perhaps start a task force to look at this. I have emailed from individuals back and said, in case Mr. Newman, and this is, I think this is a citywide issue, even though it's in his, it just happened to be in his district. But I will be supporting a task force, Mr. Mayor, so we can ensure that that everybody feels comfortable about this issue, and that we move forward. So, Ms. Hunt, I will be supporting that task force as well, and so I'm hoping, Mr. Newman, that you will take a look into it. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you, Ms. Davis. Any others? Seeing none. Madam Secretary, before we do that, let me take one point of personal privilege and make an additional appointment. Ms. Hasso, you are now, of course, officially the Chair of Public Safety. Ms. Hunt is going to join the Housing Committee. I want to thank both of you, and also want to make one additional appointment for Vice Chair of Public Safety, and that would be Councilman Jeffrey Cadane.
Mr. Cadane is Vice Chair.
Absolutely. All right, let's go through that motion again with the approval of our minutes from February 16th. Is there a motion? Move to approve. All in favor? Any opposed? All right, Madam Secretary.
Mr. Mayor, next we have the consideration of appointments to board and commissions, and you have several appointments to the Reinvestment Zone 19 Cypress Waters. Being nominated by Councilmember Salazar, and that is Mary Paz, Valetta Forsyth Lill, and Jose Gomez, and they meet all qualifications for service on that board, on the one board. And as well, you have two nominees for vice chairs of two boards, Billy Ratliff, Cliff being nominated for the Redistricting Commission, and Gerald Lee Larson being nominated for the South Dallas Fair Park Trust Fund Board, both being nominated for vice chair positions.
All right.
Move approval.
All right, all in, is there any question? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So move, Madam Secretary.
Okay.
What we will do is we have a briefing, and Ms. Soon, we're going to take item D first, and then we'll go back upward to item A.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, you received in your packet on this past week a very brief presentation on board and commissions in Dallas City Council Chapter 8 recommended amendments. Back in December the 3rd of 2010, you received a letter from the Permanent License Appeal Board regarding amending Chapter 8 of your of the Dallas City Code, and then you later received a memo from the City Secretary's office explaining the recommendations by the Permanent License Appeal Board. Danny Felice, who is the manager of Board and Commission Group in our office, is going to come forward and present you just very briefly the proposed amendments and the recommendations.
Good
Mayor, and members of the council, this morning we want to give you a brief overview of what the city charter and the city code says about attendance by board and commission members at their respective board meetings. On slide 3, you'll see that the charter says that a board member should not be absent from, should not miss more than 3 regular meetings in succession unless for medical reasons, and it has to be certified to by a physician, or unless action is taken by the respective board or commission and the city council to excuse that absence. The city code, chapter 8, talks about attendance at board meetings as well, that attendance is required, and that an excused absence means that you either bring notice from a physician that certifies the illness, or unless the absence is excused by both the board and the city council, and that 3 unexcused absences in succession shall mean that the board member forfeits their position on that board. B and C are more specific, especially for those boards that meet weekly or biweekly. If you miss more than 25% of regular meetings, whether excused or not, within a 6-month period, you forfeit your position on the board. And for those boards that meet monthly, if you miss more than 25% of the regular meetings, again, whether excused or not, within a 12-month period, you forfeit your position on the board. The code does specify what a regular meeting is, as well as a special meeting. The regular meetings are those set either to be weekly, monthly, semi-monthly, or quarterly. And those special meetings are those called by the chair or by on request of members of the board to meet outside the normal meeting schedule. What does that mean specifically? If you look on slide 12, the Permanent License Appeal Board, for example, meets monthly. If you were to miss 25% of those meetings within 12 months period, that means you would have missed 4, and that would get you disqualified from service. The Park and Recreation Board, for example, meets twice a month. It could be forfeited from that board due to excessive absences. You would need to miss 4 meetings. Now, what does it take to get an excused absence for medical reasons certified to by physician? That would mean that a board member would need to bring an excuse either before or immediately after the absence occurs so that staff will know to note the file and records of that board member. Absence is excused by the board or commission, and the city council would entail bringing an item first to that respective board and then to the city council. How are the rules applied? As I said earlier, there are special meetings, and the absences regarding absences only apply to special meetings. They do not to regular meetings. I'm sorry, they do not apply to special meetings or to committees of boards or commissions. Board coordinators are responsible for advising board and commission members when they get close to the 25% rule. The city secretary's office is notified when a board or commission member forfeits their position due to absences, and we send them a letter letting them know that they have forfeited their position and thank them for their service. One of the reasons we brought this to your attention was that the Permanent License Appeal Board did have concerns about specifically about jury duty, petit and grand jury duty, not being automatically excused under code, and then also that it is somewhat difficult to get absences excused due to illness. They wrote you a letter, and that's being passed around to you now. So your options are to simply do nothing and let the code stand as it is, or amend the code to automatically excuse absences that are because of petit or grand jury service, or to consider those absences due to petit or grand jury service on a case-by-case basis, or to make allowances for the excusal of absences that go beyond the 25%. But if you remember, if you miss more than 25%, regardless of the reason, you forfeit your position. So the fourth bullet there would grant some leeway for those absences in excess of 25%. That's your briefing this morning, Mayor, and so we're ready for questions if you have any.
All right, thank you. Ms. Coop, please.
Mayor, if I would, Marla Beichman is here. Okay. She is a member of the Permanent License Appeal Board.
All right. Ms. Coop,
one of the issues is, council members, and you probably have heard this from some of your members, is that even though the meetings are regularly scheduled, if they sometimes cancel a meeting because they don't think that they have enough business to conduct, and then the members make other plans, and then the meeting gets rescheduled again. That's been an issue, and I think that's a technical issue. I think that kind of situation, there's got to be a way to be able to rectify that through the process of the city, through the staff process. I mean, there shouldn't be a meeting that's canceled and then, you know, in the last minute rescheduled. And I've had two CALB members tell me that same thing. So however that's occurring, that is something that people make arrangements to come to meetings, and then if it's canceled and then suddenly rescheduled because they have a case, it's very challenging. So however that's handled through the staff efforts, I think you can figure out a way there. But on the Pettit Court and on the getting a summons to come and be a juror, I think all of us would agree that that's an important thing. It's a part of being a citizen. It's part of being part of the community. It's something that you should take to heart when you're called to jury duty. And I think that should be excused. So with that minor change and with some changes in perhaps either getting the message out or when you cancel a meeting, it is canceled. You know, there's no going back on it. Even if you had a case, if you're being able to figure that out, some process for that, I think that would be kind of the way I'm leaning. I don't know if others of you had the same issue or not, but that's kind of where I'm
leaning. Ms. Hoskins, please.
Thank you, Mayor. I agree with Ms. Coos on option number two. Service on a jury, whether it be Pettit or Grand, is very important. That's something that we don't even let our corporate businesses not let them go. Certainly as someone who has lived with a judge for 16 years, 20 years, you know, it's important. We've got to let them go. And the problem in our community, I know in the Hispanic community, is that it's hard to find people to serve on a grand jury. It's hard to find people to serve on boards. You know, most of our folks are working two jobs, you know, can't get away to even give service to the city. So my recommendation is to go with option two because, number one, it's a civic responsibility, and number two, it helps the community to serve on board who otherwise couldn't do it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hosko. Mr. Salazar.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think the irony is not lost that our boards and commissions can have medically excused absences, but the council cannot. I think last year I asked this council to consider a charter review process to look at things such as this. And I think this is good for the boards and commissions. I'm very supportive. But I think that the broader issue also needs to be addressed for the council. And I would urge the council and the mayor to look at possibly even looking at a charter review commission to study other changes that might be beneficial to the citizens of Dallas, to the council, to boards and commissions, and to maybe bring it back sometime in the fall. So, Mr. Mayor, I would ask you to kind of look at that. I think it's a limitation for citizens to be able to serve not only as boards and commissions, but also to run for council if, for example, medical is not taken into account issues that arise, such as jury. You know, for example, if we have jury duty, are we excused?
Not under your council rules of procedures, you're not excused.
Okay. If a council member has a child with a terminal illness and has to be there at the hospital, are they excused?
Not under your current rules of procedure.
And heaven forbid, if one of us gets pregnant or has a baby, are they excused?
No.
And my point is this, I think that we should look at the rules of service to make sure that we can afford the opportunity for people to be able to serve, who want to serve, who qualified, and to contribute to the city. So, Mr. Bear, I put that in your charge for consideration. And sir, let me just say, on your first day of the job, you're doing a really good job. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Margolis, please.
Thanks.
I would like to make a distinction between the Pettit and the grand jury service. Pettit, you are called and you need to go. Grand jury is a voluntary commitment that extends over a long period of time, and if it's going to conflict with a board or commission date, you know that in advance on a regular basis, and I think you have to make a decision. Do you want to serve on the grand jury, or do you want to stay on the board or commission? They're two very different things, and I would separate them out. I would certainly support an excused absence for Pettit jury, but not for grand jury. I think somebody's got to decide what they want to do.
Thank you, Ms. Margolin. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think Ms. Margolin sort of asked the same question, and the reason, I mean, I would like to see as many people come forward and serve as possible. The question I would have, and I don't know the scheduling of it, if a grand jury ends up being scheduled on the same date for, you know, 6 months or 8 months or 9 months, then are we really getting the value out of having somebody serving on the board? In other words, they can't be in two places. And so, I mean, I don't know how grand juries work. I mean, if it's just happenstance, I think that may be the differentiation. But if we're going to create a situation where they're excused for 6, 7, 8, 9 months, then we as the city are not getting the value of having them serve on the board, and I'm not sure it's really doing them much good towards moving them forward in their ability to serve the city either. So I think we need to look at that particular issue carefully.
Thank you. Ms. McDonald, please.
Thank you, Mayor. I thought Mr. Salazar had a great point also. I remember a few years ago that Mr. Salazar, at the death of his mom, the next day, he was at his council meeting. You know, when he was grieving at the time, and he did not miss, he came. So I think that should be also considered as well. As we review this or decide to review this, I think that's something that we definitely need to consider. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any other comments? With that, yes.
May I call on Mr. Ed Oakley, former council member? I think you have brought up a couple of issues.
Thank you, council members. The consequences of this, the permit license and appeal board issue, is that when you apply for your dance hall license, your late hours comes after. And if you miss that window, your late hours license expires. And in the past, the city attorney has ruled, or they have, the policy has been that you could continue to operate in your late hours. The new rule is that if you miss that window, your license expires and you have to close your late hours until you come back before the hearing. So when you're doing this, if you could get these two things in sync, so that, like, when you make an application for the Board of Adjustment or you make an application for a plan commission, it stays any action of the jurisdiction until you resolve that case. So there is a consequence to missing those like permit license and appeal board hearings. Thank you for letting me.
Thank you. Ms. Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And having served on the PLAB, I sympathize with points that former council member Oakley made. One thing I might suggest is, and if we've done this since I was on the PLAB, let me know, but I don't believe we have any alternate members, do we?
No, you do not.
Colleagues, I would suggest we consider having some alternate members to this board. I think we do that on some other boards that have to make timely decisions, and that way we won't have to worry about quorum issues and we won't have to worry about delays. So, how many members?
Yes, more than one half, yes.
And so we...
It's just eight members then. It's more than one half, Mr. Newman.
And so we have... what typically do we see as the absence, the number of absences that prevent us from having a quorum? Is it, if we have two alternate members, will that suffice, or do we need three?
I don't think we run into that problem anymore, Councilmember Hunt, because we no longer have panels. Remember, that ordinance amended that particular board, because we used to have panels, we had a quorum problem, but now it's a 15-member board, so we haven't had any issues with quorums as it relates to calling those meetings.
Okay,
so that's not an issue.
I didn't know if in relation to these types of absences we were having some quorum issues, but if we're not, then
we're not.
Fine. Okay, very good.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. And Ms. Watkins, if you would, and Ms. Boone, Mr. Perkins, if you all would get together and give us a direction as to what you'd like for this council to consider and have it on the agenda.
I think when we met with the, Mr. Mayor, when we met with the city attorney's office, we placed these options on the board that you see. I think it's, what, four up there? And the, if you look at option number three, this gives the council the option to waive absences on a case-by-case basis, regardless of whether it's petty jury, grand jury, any issue that comes before the board. I see Lisa frowning. I'm trying to get her attention. Are you okay? Exactly. For three in a row. What Ms. Christopherson is saying, that you have a charter provision that states that if a member is absent for more than three meetings in a row, that they can no longer serve. So regardless if a member is absent for petty jury or any reason that is considered by the council, that rule still has to stay in place, meaning that if a board member misses more than three meetings in a row, they will forfeit their position because that's a charter provision. However, on the 25% rule, I'm getting to Mr. Thompson, on the 25% rule, you can waive an absence.
Okay.
You got me?
And I guess I'm driving to the point of Ms. Margolin and Mr. Natinsky's concern as relates to grand jury. Are we saying that that would remain, but it would automatically fall under
case-by-case basis? Yes. That option number three would be case-by-case. Ms. Christopherson, am I still clear on it? You still look. Let me have the attorney come up and clarify.
Yeah. Because I want to make sure you understand all options.
Okay, just quickly straighten out. Okay, there's the charter provision that says if you miss more than three in a row without it being excused for medical reasons or by the board and council, takes both actions, then you forfeit. That provision is not what we're dealing with here. The provision that we are amending is the city code amendment, which basically says if you miss 25% of the meetings, for, regardless whether they're excused or not, then you forfeit your position. Now, what we're trying to do, it has to do with what you're going to have be calculated into that 25%. So what the options that the city secretary gave you was whether to have jury duty automatically not calculated in, whether to have jury duty not calculated in when it's reviewed by the council on a case-by-case basis, or whether to have jury duty and maybe just some other things not calculated into the 25% when reviewed on a case-by-case basis by the city council. It does not change, does not affect other absences that will be coming to you to be reviewed on a case-by-case basis for excusal under the three-meeting rule.
All right, Ms. Tilton, Ms. Tilton.
Point of clarification. Is this, go back one slide. Is this just for PALB or is it for other?
This would be for all boards and commissions.
Oh, I'm
okay.
Sorry.
The Permanent License Appeal Board is the board that brought it to our attention because we had members that were serving on grand jury, and that was a concern of that board. We've also had the question asked in the past by other board and commissions that the attendance issue has kind of been lingering on the books for a while.
That was going to be my first question. So, Ms. Christopherson, what you're saying is if we adopt any one of these where we're going to allow a waiver, the three in the row rule that is in the charter is unchanged. So if somebody misses three meetings in a row, they are still off the board or commission.
Right.
unless the absence is excused by the board and the council, which the charter allows. Remember, the three meeting rule is three unexcused absences. The 25% rule is 25% of any absences.
So if we excuse it, then it doesn't count toward the three either, or the 25%. I mean, they're both working together.
They may or may not, depending on the way it's calculated, yeah.
Well, the other question for Ms. Watson, and I hesitate sometimes when we try to do these things with the unintended consequences. Now we're bringing back, through your office, through the city's hierarchy, and all the way to the council, more agenda items to end up on our agendas for us to take action on. I don't mind figuring out a way to do the excuses. I would almost rather have them set up to where we don't have to, we don't create a whole other mechanism of a lot of busy work for everybody to do. So I guess what I'm saying is I would find it hard for my years on the council and for my years of watching the council that any one of these waivers are going to come to the council and at the end of the day not be approved. They're all going to be approved. So
the boards and commissions have used a lot of discretion in making that decision before it gets to the council. And we don't have that many. We haven't had that many in the past. And the boards are pretty good at using their discretion.
So the ability, they have the ability to sort of cut it off at their level.
Exactly.
And not let it escalate
come
to the council level.
Exactly.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
All right, thank you. And Ms. Boone, you're going to deal with some type of
exactly. If you want to move the case by case basis,
and I think that is probably not more appropriate to go case by case. Okay. All right.
Thank you, Ms. Watson. Let's go to briefing item number A, West Dallas Urban Structure and Guidelines. Mr. Salazar has a conflict. He's going to excuse himself on this item.
We're going to ask, Teresa O'Donnell is going to introduce this briefing, but I wanted to take a minute to tell you how excited we are. This is the first product from the City Design Studio, and you remember we started the City Design Studio in 2009 with a very generous gift from Dee Dee and Rusty Rose to look at how our development and urban design could be more closely aligned. We began work on this particular project at the base of the Margaret Hunt Hill Bridge in that summer with a dreaming session that many of you were at, St. Mary's at Carmel, and it was just the most exciting and interesting mix of folks talking about the future that I've participated in a long time. And the things that we wanted to encourage were innovation and dreaming and looking at all the possibilities. For guidance, we had Larry Beasley, who is renowned around the world for his work in urban design, currently working with us now in Abu Dhabi also. He's responsible for the experience in Vancouver, turning that city around. And his career has always placed a strong emphasis on good urban design and good public space. But he's also the vice president of a development company, so he knows about, got to have the element of making a profit in this development. So that's been a real part of this, too. So this plan has a focus on preserving existing assets, on looking at potential new development, and at the same time maintaining good public space. So we're very proud of this piece of work. This is only the first step. This is a planning document, and we hear a lot of talk around here about, oh, you do plans and you set them on the shelf. Our next step is to begin the implementation process. The implementation process will be done like the planning process with a lot of public involvement and a lot of discussion, and we're beginning that immediately after the council considers this for a vote next Wednesday, provided it gets approved. Again, it will involve the residents, the business folks, the landholders, everybody in partnership to work on this, and we'll be back to you. The next thing you'll see is an implementation plan in the next several months. So we're very excited about this, and Teresa, I'll turn it over to you and Brent.
Thank you, ma'am. As the city manager said, this is a great effort, and we're very excited about bringing this forward today. Brent's going to walk you through the plan,
But I just wanted to kind of tee this up because it really ushers in a new way to do these planning processes. Much like we heard with the Better Blocks fellows yesterday, a real emphasis on grassroots planning and strong neighborhood participation. We didn't kind of do the formal, stiff way that we've done before. David, Arturo, Brent, and the staff, and our intern, Justin, did a great job. We had probably over 40 meetings, everything from a traditional town hall style meeting to a meeting in people's living rooms. We had a couple of meetings at McDonald's with folks that just wanted to learn and understand about the plan. We were able to engage a cross-section of the residents and the citizens out there who normally would be reluctant to interact with City Hall. I see some of our leaders here today, Randall White and Bob and David from Fort Worth Development Corporation for coming out today. I really want to thank them. So a big hats off to everybody that's been involved and stayed with us in this process. The second kind of big success of this project is really using urban design to explain very complicated planning and zoning concepts. These guys have done a tremendous job through the visual expression of these ideas. And as you'll look through the document today, you'll see a lot of graphics and pictures and ideas and concepts that have been expressed. So it's a great piece of work. Brett's going to walk you through that, and then we'll be happy to answer any questions you might have. It is on your agenda next week for consideration. So with that, I'll turn it over to Brett.
Thank you. Well, a lot of what I'm going to say in the beginning has been said, so I'm going to move quickly. But in general, to talk about the process today and then walk you through the actual approach to the implementation itself. So as Teresa mentioned, the context of this, the Forward Dallas, is key. And in addition, the involvement and the consideration of all these other endeavors that we're in the middle of, things like complete streets, streetcars, as well as the bike plan. They have informed what our work has been about, as well as I hope this work will help to inform as we go forward. So very quickly, the target and the focus area for this work is bounded by Sylvan, I-30, and the Trinity River. This is an area just under 475 acres, a population of about 1,500 existing residents. It is about a mile and a half from downtown, and ironically, it has about a mile and a half of levee or river frontage, as I would say, along its north and west. As was mentioned by the city manager, we convened a dream session. And what was important about this was to put stakeholders in the room before positioning, before beginning to take a position on different interests, to actually have a session to dream. Many of you were there, you're familiar with this, and it's helped us to become familiar with the area, the blow-up of that focus area. And what we begin to do is to understand sort of qualities of the space before we ever propose any types of solutions. And so the understanding of a city neighborhood and their dreams, the reality of existing businesses that exist in that area that you'll see here represented by these orange circles, the existence of a rail line that cuts across this area that's been there since before the levee, has two current crossing points of Beckley and of Sylvan, which I'll touch on again here in a minute, and then obviously that frontage that is adjacent to the Trinity Park that we dream and envision. So as we began to move into a different level of detail, we convened a more deliberate conversation about how to put those interests around the table and resolve it by the use of design. And so here you see a photograph in the studio where various participants, both from the neighborhood, from business, from city staff, as well as from our local design community, investors, developers, and et cetera. This was one of many tables. And out of that came a series of ideas that were then synthesized and put into a concept that I will talk about and that has been really for the last year been a part of that discussion. So from a input and process standpoint, the dream session, the thread that I've mentioned, you heard the mention of almost 40 meetings. I think we are up to 40 meetings now and probably 400 participants. I will say even last night we were meeting with residents in that neighborhood. If anyone had any questions or just for clarity and to make sure that people are informed. The town hall in January was well attended, and the Plan Commission just at the beginning of February recommended a approval of the document. So as we have met in literally living rooms to boardrooms, conference rooms, and the like, we've had many organizations involved. The La Bajada Neighborhood Association is one, the Chambers, the West Dallas, as well as the Oak Cliff Chamber. But we've also had nonprofit builders. We've had churches. Churches have opened their doors to us for meetings, residents and the like. Professional groups like the American Institute of Architects, the Real Estate Council, the Downtown Planning Council, et cetera, have all been involved and been supportive of this. You'll see here a geocoding of individual property owners that have directly participated in meetings. So from the city standpoint, as an office here in City Hall, the involvement of city staff has been key. They have been there, like I showed a picture at the charrette. They were there at the dream session. They have vetted this. They have edited. They've given their time, both from an internal and external standpoint. Their direct review and discussion is in this document, and without them, this would not have been possible. So the guidebook that you have in front of you, I'm going to kind of go through that quickly. You can turn it, you can flip to either side, one in Spanish and one is in English. It's a bilingual document, as everything that we do is. This document was created by the staff in the studio here in City Hall. All of these drawings are a product of this staff. It is the design and the dream and the direct voice that we've heard in this area of our city. And so the ideas, I actually have to give over to those stakeholders, residents, investors, developers, business individuals, et cetera, that have been a part of those numerous meetings that we've had. And we've had the great fortune of drawing them. So here the concept plan, which is before you, is the core of this. There are 7 points. I'm going to focus on 3 today, which are the most significant. 1, supporting, enhancing, protecting an existing city modest neighborhood. The creation of a high-density spine street that begins to connect for the first time Singleton and Commerce. This is really the design move that was sort of the light bulb where we could begin to promote density and we could begin to make a connection for the first time, as you see, those two areas converging on a rail line, which has the potential for a TOD transit hub long-term, a commuter route in the 2030 plan that connects us to Arlington and Fort Worth again. But in that zone, that ability to have density there without threatening that city neighborhood. The other component of this is that as density spreads east and west, it helps also to reduce that speculation that a typical neighborhood might experience if it was going down single. So how it may step down in a very respectful way. You'll notice these other areas that are kind of fuzzy, that are noted in pink and sort of purple and an orange. Those are areas, there are businesses there. Remember those circles, there are businesses, there are jobs, there are property owners. How do we activate vacant buildings in that area? We realize that this will not happen overnight. How do we take an incremental and organic approach, which I'll touch on here in just a moment. So this becomes the backbone, the intention of the urban structure. So if you, as you come through, you'll see aspects of neighborhood character. This is merely a communicative tool to begin to say, you know, in that modest neighborhood, single family, 1-2 story, you can connect with that image. It is not intended stylistically as much as to really begin to talk about character and story. The street represented part of our public space, the development of a street network and that connectivity. You'll see those 3 crossing points, again, of the rail line that now give us 5 in addition to the current Sylvan and Beckley. That begins to set up a network where you can have the strategy of everything from a parkway-type street associated with Commerce and Sylvan, Singleton, to the network of local streets where residents in the community that's there begin to move. And they work in tandem. I cannot tell you, transportation planning has been key to this. We have had so many conversations about how this type of character can help to lend to help streets like Sylvan and Beckley and those not have to grow in their scale. You'll see cross sections. All of this in keeping with the aspects of bike planning and complete streets. Public spaces beyond our streets, the parks. The Trinity Park is a regional park. It is our vision for a place of gathering for hundreds and thousands. But we also have to be intentional about thinking in the notion of special public spaces, mini parks, community parks, and making sure. And here what you see is a diagram that begins to look at, as density comes online, the proximity of those spaces to that type of amenity. And doing this before development is key so that we can ensure a greater possibility of getting the livable, walkable place that we want. Architectural guidelines play a role here as we invest and we improve our streets and public spaces. the buildings and as they are adjacent to them. You've heard a lot about this. I know it's a 360 plan in downtown. But here, how, as development comes forward, it supports the character of that street, and the street supports the character of those buildings. This is not stylistic. This is not about colors and materials and the specificity of that. It is about how buildings are sited and how they respect and engage the street. There are a series of cartoons, as we call them here, which begin to illustrate and unfold development over time with targets, looking at 10, 15, and on. We believe that in these targets, there is a way for us to see how we're doing. You will see specifically the idea of increased population, households. It will also look at renovated square footage, new square footage, and in addition to that, it will talk about open space or public space. So as I go through that, you will see it ultimately yield a population of 24,000, potentially somewhere in the neighborhood of about $3 billion of development investment, and you see the public space that also is noted there. Thank you. This last page, which goes into a list of action items, as I talked about those three tenets, sitting community, new dense communities, and the incremental development and activation of areas where businesses are today in West Dallas. Those become the implementation strategy within those sectors, with the studio and the city staff playing a role of monitoring, review, and activation. Implementation will employ the same methodology as was mentioned with regard to a very charrette community-based stakeholder participation. And as was stated, we would be back with many recommendations in that light. The chambers have both voted in support of our of this urban structure, and I'll touch on that here in just a moment. First, let me say that there are key projects underway already right now. La Bajada is a neighborhood improvement program as a part of the housing department. There is enhancement there of the streets. There's been this wonderful dialogue. The studio has helped to facilitate and work with the housing department. And already on Herbert Street, there's some traffic calming and some other things as a direct response of what we've learned through that input process. You know, flood control improvements are happening, Tavaho, et cetera, West Dallas Gateway. Interim uses and the idea of equivalencies that will be key to those action items and how we activate those buildings are already underway, and conversations around mobile restaurants and things such as that. And as we look at other street improvements like Beckley Commerce, Sylvan, and the like that are out there currently, how does that help to activate some of those new developments that you would have seen in the cartoon? These larger initiatives that are ongoing in the city, bike plan, complete streets and streetcar, which I've talked about, will continue to offer an opportunity where innovation can play a role within the work here at the city. So, as I just said, the city is an innovator. As we're convening this discussion and these interests between single-family modest neighborhoods and high-density opportunities around development, that those can happen in proximity to one another when they are done in an equitable way, and design can play that role. This can serve as a full-scale urban laboratory. The two chambers who have voted and claimed support for this, West Dallas and Oak Cliff, have prepared a wonderful suite of a business case of how implementation might happen. Convening that, those groups with residents and with staff and working on that will be a key part as to how we are successful. Keeping the conversation going, keeping the momentum and the energy that we felt over this last year, and as I hope will help again the spirit where West Dallas begins to become an equally, its position associated with downtown as a catalyst within the core of our city over time. So with that, thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Boone?
In closing, this is a real exciting thing for all of us that I think is the beginning of lots of things for the entire city. I would like to tell you that I think you will see, one of the first places you'll see this again is as we talk about a bond program, which we will talk about soon. It will have to be a conservative bond program, I think, but it's certainly something that we'll be discussing. There will be a recommendation from staff to make some investment in this area vis-a-vis the bond program. The second thing I would like to repeat is how much I appreciate the residents, the businesses, and the investors in that area. This has been a new approach for everybody, and everybody's participated, sometimes been a little bit surprised, But in the end, a wonderful product has come out, and I want to thank them for suspending their disbelief about some values that they thought the city held and being willing to work with us and put this amazing thing together. Now, implementation will approach the same way, and we'll be back to you shortly talking about that. But again, it's been a great experience for all of us, and I appreciate our partners and their work on it.
I think, Mr. Newman, we're going to go to speakers. It's going to be Mr. Newman, Ms. Matensky, Mr. Atkins, Mr. Davis, and Ms. Hopper.
Thank you, Mayor. Brent, thank you very much. I participated in the audience and otherwise in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of these. And each time you present it, I learn something new. Each time you present it, you bring the same passion and expertise for it. So thank you for your leadership. What a great example of public-private partnership in the private donation to jumpstart the design studio. I'm very pleased with that, and thank you very much for your team. Is David Whitley here as well? And David as well. You know, David's quiet, but he is so good. We miss him as part of the Trinity planning and the area plans that you spearheaded in the years past. So thank you, David. This is a dynamic duo of these two guys together. So thank you, Mary, for helping pull that together in the private sector. This particular project, although by design and geography is solely in District 6, but it absolutely has legs. And it will have legs as it creeps and moves positively west to District 3 and the other portions of West Dallas. It has legs as it moves south, again back into District 3, crossing Interstate 30. So this is a very important blueprint that I'm very pleased to be part of and supportive of. Indeed, 475 acres, and we have the primary property owner right now. Is it 68 acres? Is it 80 some acres? What is it, Brent?
About
68 acres. And if you'll notice, a lot of the buildings in the neighborhood have been colored and painted, and for a while it threw a lot of people for a loop. Even today, I talked to neighbors about some of the buildings and the painting of the colors, and they say, well, why did they paint them? To denote positive change coming. So it is very much a positive thing. And as you mentioned, adjacency to the Trinity, West Dallas in this particular, the Laba Haba neighborhood, which Mr. Salazar lives in, is indeed on the doorstep of the Trinity. And the great plans that we still have, once we master the issues of the levees, which we absolutely will, are going to be fabulous. Come October of this year, we'll be driving across the Margaret Hunt Hill Bridge. It'll be a great celebration for our city, and it will, in plain, and come right into this community. So it's a very positive thing. At the beginning, you're right. I remember the first meetings that we had at the church on Singleton. There were nervous neighbors. People were nervous. Mr. Beasley had come down from Portland, and he started this process. I remember the first venue with the handout we had, and people were nervous about where is this going? Who's pushing this? Is this for one person's benefit, or is this for a larger area? Clearly, council members, this will have a very positive impact on the immediate community, and then, as I said before, as this moves successfully west, as this moves successfully south. Another comment I want to repeat, it's your comment, you get credit for it, but it's absolutely true, living rooms to boardrooms. Too often when we have development in our city, it's just the boardroom, or sometimes it's just the living room. What we have to do as council members and our professional staff and our designers and thoughtmen and planners is make sure you tie together living rooms and boardrooms. When you tie together living rooms and boardrooms, it does work. Dallas shows again that it can do. So I'm very pleased about it and supportive, and I think this is a very good step forward for the immediate West Dallas community and for the larger area, of which it will have positive legs, both west and south. Thank you, Brent. Thank you, Mary. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Well, I'm not going to repeat everything that Mr. Newman said, because I think this is really a big step forward to the redevelopment and revitalization of the West Dallas part of the southern sector, and can be the catalyst for what we do in the balance of the southern sector. There have been several comments about plans being put on shelves, and I think the biggest hurdle we're going to have is moving this toward implementation. Having participated in a couple of the meetings, especially the closing one where everything was brought together, it was very gratifying to see the consensus that the community had with this project. I think we have to work very hard on the implementation. This will not do us any good if it sits on the shelf again. There's two things I want to kind of home in on. In the materials, they talk about, you know, the adoption of new financial incentives, and we talk in economic development about a lot of the tools that we have in our toolbox. Obviously, the ones that were listed in here are our existing sets of tools, and I'm not sure what level of success we're going to have just with those levels, with those tools, and moving this forward. I think if we're going to create these mini economic zones, or I don't care what you call them, we're going to have some other tools to be able to move those projects forward, and we're going to have to be thinking out of the box, and we're going to have to be innovative. The old way of doing business is not going to work in these areas. We've tried it for years, and it has not been successful. So we need to take, you know, maybe the first rule we need is that there won't be any rules as we develop the process. We do want to keep it legal, so that'd be the only rule we have. We need to really come up with some other ideas. We need to sit around and have some brainstorming of things that will work. I don't think it can be strictly just a handout. I think it has to be a helping hand. I think it needs to be a partnership. This is probably, in my mind, the first, let's call it a pilot zone that we do. But I think at the same time, we shouldn't put so much of a burden on this particular community that it's sink or swim with this one. I think it might really help us if we could find a couple other areas where we could start a process similar to this. And they would be in line to do this second or third down the road and then build on that. If we can be successful, we'll learn along the way, and we just need to make sure that we don't give up too easily on this. This has to happen. We've come too far on this. And the other comment is, there was in the material, there was some talk about Allen and Frisco and some of the successes that they have had. And I think we have to be cognizant, because those two cities in particular use 4A, 4B money to fund their economic development. Dallas doesn't have that option. We're sales tax out. We don't have any options to raise it. But that doesn't mean that we can't come up with some other creative ways to bring money, resources, and aid to the table. We're a can-do city. We can make it happen, and we need to move forward on this and take the challenge to take this particular West Dallas neighborhood and make it the first successful pilot project. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. McKenzie. Mr. Atkins, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Great presentation. You know, I guess the land use plan and also the implementation, we have so many plans like this, you know, kind of just I use my vision, just imagine you were teaching, you know, the land use, the zoning, which you're trying to do, the public-private partnership you're trying to do. You talk about households, you talk about 16,000 students there, you talk about retail, you're talking about the population on the growth, all of these same amenities, you already got there. I mean, we got this project, we got another project in South Dallas already in France. We got a university already institutionalized and be there for that. And we had a growing thing. And I was looking at a company of this project versus UNC. We do got to think out of the box. We just can't go back and finance these type of projects as we have been doing in the past. We got to be more creative. We do have two in the city box. We do play more teams into the city box. And just we don't have to do it. Again, as Mary was saying, with the new bond taxes, we don't know if we can be able to have that money to be this public project. I think that with this going down the road maybe 6 months from now, we got to find out how do we invest in our neighborhood. How do the city invest and get a return back and put the property tax back into the neighborhood and make sure the property taxes are up. And that's what we have a major problem with implementation. We talk about it, you know, we got probably over 100 studies on the shelf, and we always talking to great vision, but when do the rubber meet the wood? When they actually do that, and I think by doing that, we're trying to be more creative. Mary, I think that with the bond tax, we don't know how we're going to do it, we don't know how much money we'll have in the bond tax, but I think now is a good time to open that workshop and say, what do it take? I think that what we have to do right now is look at different sales. You got to look at West Dallas, you got to look at Rankin, you got to look at Fair Park, you got to look at UNC. Maybe put get about 10 to 15 different projects in the same sector. I guess, Mayor, when you look at the funding, when you look at the timeline, is there a way that we can be more creative that I can be raised and certified with public-private partnerships to say, you know what, we got $25 million here or $50 million. We're not trying to say earmark for the certain sector, but earmark for different sales, for different part of projects. Because if you look at, you know, the chemical park, the Windwood, you know, the Pearl Park, the Lincoln Corridor, UNT, the Southwest Center Mall, Pleasant Grove, those are different sales. We could put them in the corral and say, how do we find it? Who's one of the, how do we kind of create it? Who's right now?
Yeah, the first thing I need to say is, all of you remember, this is not the one area we're working on. It's featured today, but it is not. And we perhaps you're right, a good overview of each area and the tools we're using in each area and where we are in each area would be helpful. It's not the only area we're working in. In fact, in many ways, as you pointed out and at your urging, the UNT process is much further down the road than this is. So we'll see about bringing back a general overview of what's going on those projects, where they are, where we think they're moving. But you all are going to have to help us with some priorities. You heard the state legislatures. You know that going forward, we're going to have to know what we want to do and when we want to do it, and that's the tough part of this work. So I think, please know, there's all sorts of work going on in all sorts of areas. This one's featured today, but many others are further ahead in this one, and we'll bring all that back in the general overview for you here shortly.
And also, Mary, also mark our way that, you know, it's an urgent sometimes that when you see one project and you get kind of focused, I know other projects are doing an impact.
Right. Love
so
that.
Therefore, you know, you say this is one project, but we got 20 more projects, and when you try to sell the city of Dallas to other cities or other countries, they want to know all the projects together and what is the timeline. Is this more sort of get this project, or will you need one versus two versus three in order to get investment?
And you recognize, because you've worked with it a long time, a project will move along, and then the economy or difficulties with a private developer will happen. Those projects may slow for a moment, but I can give you lots and lots of projects that have slowed and then been reinvigorated later on down the road. So there is lots of work going on in many places, and we want to give you an overview and talk about that. And I think your point's well taken, and for having you a little guide to say all these things, because you are the salespeople of our city.
And just in closing, that's what I'll lead into, that when people look at Dallas, you said that we have high sales of property tax, higher, you know, this is not a great place to be. I won't throw that on the road and say, hey, this is a great place to be. Look at all these different projects we've got. You know, it's not because our taxes are high, because we've got old infrastructure we're trying to replace it. This is a new page, and we're trying to make sure we're selling Dallas. Sometimes people have not been selling Dallas the right way. So therefore, we got to resell Dallas and say, hey, this is the best place to live.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Atkins. Ms. Davis, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mary, a couple of things. You know, we got to kind of label all our projects that's going on. And I'm going to support Steve on this. But I think when we look at these projects, I would have loved to see a presentation today with all the tools in each area.
Well, I've committed to doing that.
Let me finish. With all the tools in each area. Now, I see that this is an urban structure and guidelines. Some of the stuff in this doesn't fit in my neighborhood.
Yes, I know. That's why you have to look at them each individually.
Right.
And you're
so
right.
How do we draft all of this and put it into one package?
No, it can't be one package, because you're absolutely right. Every area is different.
Okay. No, I'm just talking about the theme. I'm just only talking about a theme at this point. Because, for example, in Jen's area, they get the better block. I love that. I think it works. Some of them will work in District 7. And you take Bear Street, of all the investment, over $8 million
that's
been invested in that area. I think that should have been an urban structure and a guideline to show people what you can do in an area like Bear Street. And you used to have Bear Street was years ago.
Okay.
Now you go down down that street, people are just like, oh my God.
But that happened a different way, and the results were very, very positive.
At that particular
right,
time.
Right, yes, absolutely.
So you have that, and then you got all the other things that I think that we could look at. POD development
mm-hmm.
that's being talked about here in this city throughout different people's districts and the things that can go around a POD. And you have funding. So I just think we need to just look at a lot of things in each district. Street lighting, the better block program, the POD, urban structure, like the Bear Street, banners. You know, a banner can just make a whole neighborhood, just like when we put the banners up on Martin King,
mm-hmm.
it just gives that whole street a different look.
Right.
And it's just banners. It's not nothing, you know, it's just banners and bike trails and all of this stuff. I think, Mary, that all of my council members, especially in the public sector, is looking for something to enhance each and every one of their neighborhoods.
Yes. Now, but y'all are going to have to tell me what you want to do first and how much you want to do. That's why we have to talk about it, because
well,
you know the money is an issue.
And I understand, but I think what has to happen, a presentation, what should have to happen, we might need to do a special day where we just talk about this. And so for each district, just kind of just put everything that's going on there, see how we can connect all of this. This is a wonderful, wonderful presentation.
This is a year's worth of work. And of course, like Bear's had 10 years worth of work and
right.
$8 million, so it goes.
Yeah. So
we'll bring you a presentation. I hear what you're
right.
saying.
And how do we connect this stuff?
Okay.
And make it right. Because some of it to me is little things.
Yeah.
And I know little things have cost to it. Like Martin Luther King, for example, and even in my Fort East Dallas area, they were like just banners from certain areas and painting them light poles and little stuff like that. And I know it's time for all of it. So I'm waiting to see how you.
We'll put together an overview presentation.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you, Ms. Davis. Ms. Hossel, please.
Thank you, Mayor. I want to reiterate what Councilmember Natinsky said about pilot zones. We've got to figure out, just as my colleague here has said, on the connection between this wonderful project in West Dallas. The legs that Dave talked about, those legs go right into District 1, which is Bishop Arts and, you know, Methodist Hospital. And so, you know, we've got to start making sure that there are some zones that we can look at to connect all of the wonderful projects that are happening. All of those enhancements that Ms. Davis was talking about. You know, I would love to have banners on Jefferson Boulevard. How am I going to do that? I don't know. I know there's a cost. So what's first, streets or banners? You know, we've got to figure out how to bring additional resources to the table so that we can enhance our neighborhood the way that they should be enhanced every day. And whether it's a major project like this or something that we can do small like the Better Block project, you know, all of those things have to start connecting to all of us, because we're not just one district, we're the whole city. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Seeing no other, Ms. Toome, I think some of what I heard was from Mr. Atkins, maybe some type of progress report collectively
right.
as
right.
relates to what is happening throughout the entire city. Maybe a quarterly report or something like that to say, well, this project is on target. I know you can do those things. So that's what I'm thinking.
Well, we're going to bring you a briefing back on the overview.
All right. Mr. Tim.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Can I just make sure that, and Mary, maybe you tell me what your thoughts are on this, but I think we need to begin putting the process that we're going to do on how we're going to get these tools in the toolbox as part of that. Is that something staff can work on?
Yes, but you can't get that as quickly as you can get this other, the
well,
overview, and I think the overview is pretty important to have, and that will give you a kind of look at what the tools are, but focusing on what tools we use, I think is also separate from
well,
that.
Well, no, I guess what I'm saying is we need to begin the process to get some new tools in the toolbox.
Oh, that's starting.
Somebody has to start working on that. We need to be appraised of the...
We are. We haven't gotten as far enough to bring them to y'all yet.
Okay.
And again, I cannot overemphasize the challenges that face us in this budget year, and not in Dallas. I know that we can manage our issues, but the state's in a dire situation, and the feds are too, and that is going to have enormous impact on us, and I want any discussions that we have of that type, of that tool, to be incorporated in the discussion you're going to have to deal with this summer.
Well, my response to that, Mary, would be I would rather have the tools in the toolbox and then make a decision that we can't take one of them out right now because of budgetary constraints than to not have them in the toolbox because we're fretting about what the state and or the feds may do to us during the process.
That's fine, but I need to be able to tell you what the impact is.
Okay. Yeah, I agree.
We'll do that.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right. This is what we're going to do. Thank you for your patience. Thank you. Let me tell you how we're going to move from here. We have a press conference at 2:30. The van is going to leave at 2:10 from L1 Green. Let me make that announcement. Also, we have two presentations. We still have our two police women that are here. We honored two earlier. So, Ms. Hasso, we're going to stop for a moment and recognize that. And also, Mr. Atkins, if you would, get your group ready. We're going to do a couple presentations quickly, and then we're going to hear our speakers, and then we're going to go into executive session, and we're going to take a break from that point. How about that? Let's flow it that way. Ms. Hasso, you have the floor. Then
Ms. Atkins. Thank you, Mayor. All right, you guys have all heard about the police women in DPD. And these are two of our other stars of the show. You will come on up.
My name is Officer Shaggy, and I'm at Northeast Substation. And I've been with the department for 2 years.
You did a great job.
The show was so much fun to do, and it was really nice to be able to interact with everybody in the city, but I think probably the most challenging part was because it was in the middle of the summer, and it was so hot, we would have to do things, we'd have to be outside most of the time, and we're just dripping, so we can't be the most beautiful officers when we're sweating and sweating and sweating, but we tried.
Sergeant Jones. Hello, I'm Tracy Jones, and I work at Southeast Substation. I've been on for 15 years, and the show was fun. At first, it was a little aggravating having the camera follow you everywhere, you know, seeing your every move for 8 hours every day, and then going home with you, too. But after it was all over with, it was worth it. I had a good time, and I would definitely do it again.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you. All righty.
Thank you.
All right, Ms. Atkins. And thank you, Ms. Hasso. And thank you all for all your service, okay? All right. Appreciate you.
Thank you, ma'am. We have here today the Honorable Lena Jaba Kimu from Kenya. She is a member of the parliament. She is assistant minister on the corporation development marketing. Dr. Kima is also a chairman of the women parliament. She continues to be forced to fight for women rights in Kenya. Dr. Lena was elected in January of 2008. She is in her second time as assistant minister. Before coming to the system, Dr. Lena was a minister of agriculture from 2002 to 2007. She was in New York for the Commission of State of Women. She had been recognized by the president of her country for all her numerous contributions related to the plight of women. So without further ado, Dr. Lena Jaba Kaliba.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much. As you've heard, my name Lina. We say JB Kilimo. Kilimo. Kilimo means agriculture.
Okay.
And I was visiting your country, New York, as you have been put, to present a paper before the UN Assembly on MDG 4 and 5, that is maternal mortality rate, and women, science, technology, education, empowerment of women. So as the chairperson of women members of parliament in my country, I was there addressing the congregation on the issues that affect women, and in particular there is something called female genital cutting or female genital mutilation, of which I am known as a champion in my country. At some point they used to refer to me as FGM because that is one vice that I managed to escape from by running away from home in 1981, and up to now many girls still run. So I was presenting the effect of FGM in relation to maternal mortality rate because of the health complications women go through when they undergo the genital cutting, and the effect of education in that it is done to girls as a rite of passage from childhood to adulthood. And so after the cutting, we have early marriages, teenage pregnancies, and so at the end of the day, we are not able to achieve education for the girl side and the development of the human side. After I finished, I came visiting your beautiful city of Dallas, and since we have a new constitution that deals with devolution of power from the central government to what we are calling county, I heard about the best practices out here, especially on transportation, so I visited that and had wanted to come and see what will happen in the county. Exactly what I see here with what we will do in implementation of our new constitution, because every county will have their own county assembly, and I was really impressed to see. In fact, as I saw the presentation, I said, okay, so this is what we are going to do in our county, bringing down development from the central government to the local government. And so I really appreciate, and I want to thank the U.S. government for the support that they give to the U.N. body, for they are the ones that really support programs worldwide, especially as far as equality are concerned and women. And in our new constitution, we have one third space for women. And glad to see Mary that is the chair of the Dallas. And I do hope that in our new devolved structure, we can have women governors and women chairmen of our So I'm really grateful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Atkins. Madam Secretary, we're going to go to our speakers.
Our first afternoon speaker is Terry Bennett, followed by Trina Trench. Neither one present this afternoon. Next will be Richard Hunter. Let me recite the rules for speaking quickly, Mr. Hunter. Citizens and other visitors attending the City Council meeting shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any person making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting, shall be removed from the room as the sergeant at arms and so directed by the presiding officer. and the person shall be barred from further audience before the city council during that session of the city council. You have 3 minutes to speak, and then you'll see an amber lighting on the number, and then you'll see a red lighting when you stop. So state your name and your address, sir.
Richard Hunter. I've given my address to the city secretary, but I ask that that be withheld for privacy reasons. I come before the council today to plead with you to please make good on the suggestion by former Mayor Tom Leppard of writing stricter guidelines for awarding keys to the city. It has now been almost a month since I watched a convicted felon who has not even fulfilled the terms of his probation accept what was represented as the city's highest honor from Dwayne Carraway. Mr. Carraway, on February 5th, before my very eyes, you publicly proclaimed that a power had been bestowed on you to give Michael Vick what you gleefully identified as the key to the city of Dallas. You more than anyone else in this room should now see the need for a more clearly defined guidelines where an official city honor is concerned. Mayor Tom Leppard reacted to this travesty by not only disavowing your actions, but by also calling for stricter guidelines to be written where the keys to the city are concerned. Unfortunately, he then promptly quit, leaving his own suggestion as the unfinished business of his administration. I've been advised by the city attorney's office that the support of any 5 council members can ensure that an item is placed on the agenda. Surely there are 5 of you who are willing to take the position that no convicted felon should be awarded a key to the city of Dallas. To put this gray area in perspective, as it stands now, without that stipulation, Michael Vick, or the next criminal who dazzles a council member with his celebrity, could meet a standard for accepting a key to the city of Dallas, yet be rejected for a license to be employed as a legal prostitute by the state of Nevada. I ask today that we at least elevate our standards for a key to the city to that of a license to be employed as a sex worker. As those of you who chose to attend the morning session of February 9th and stayed seated for my remarks that day already know, I am the proud, loving caregiver of one of Michael Vick's surviving victims. Mr. Carraway, on February 5th, I witnessed you delivering a slap in the face to my family, a household of your constituents. The rest of the country laughed at our city, but in my house there were only tears. Now a month removed, I have not heard so much as an apology from you. I'm not talking about the "I'm sorry if you don't think the way that I do" non-apology. It's the "I'm sorry I bestowed a city honor on the man who tortured and tried to kill your dog" apology that I'm expecting, and I would be happy to hear that today if you were so willing. I conclude, the rest of you didn't create this mess, but you can sure help Mayor Carraway clean it up by writing stricter guidelines that will prevent something like this from ever happening again. I'm really begging each of you. I don't want another Dallas citizen to ever be ashamed or humiliated by their own city officials the way I was that day. It's a feeling of shock and pain that no proud Dallas citizen should ever endure. Can I have your pledge today that you will protect the future of Dallas Pride? I will be available at the conclusion of the meeting to speak with any of you who might have a moment of your time to offer, and it would be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Secretary.
Our next speaker is Zumba Nalek. Frank Ward.
Glory to God. Good morning. My subject today is the great white hope, no faith, race matters. When I was a young boy growing up in Nevada here in Dallas, I wanted to be in the armed forces. My late uncle was a war hero in the Navy, Elijah Davis Moore, also known as P-Vine by some folks. I wanted to be a Marine, and one day I heard about this fighter, this boxer called Cassius Clay. And my dad, he always wanted me to be a fighter. And I began to pay attention to Cassius Clay. And I remember when he refused to go to Vietnam, so he went to jail. And at that point, I decided I no longer wanted to be a Marine. But I watched Cassius Clay, who later became Muhammad Ali, do some extraordinary things in the ring. He really brought the high dollar and the value to that sport. But ever since then, there has always been a desire and a need for a great white hope. America still wanted, they wanted another great white hope, a white champion. And that mentality spread on into the leadership of my community, of my people. My people bought into that, and they made deals. one day that there was going to be a white mayor that was going to help him develop the southern sector. Well, that prophecy was partially fulfilled. But more important, another prophecy has been fulfilled. And the evidence is the mayor today, Mayor Dwayne Carraway. Today, this prophecy is fulfilled that the old leadership for the African-American community is coming to an end. And this prophecy of Mayor Carraway is evidence for that. We no longer are subjected to the old deals that were made, the old promises that were made 30 and 40 years ago. It is true, the word of God, that all things are possible to him that believes. And Mayor Dwayne Carraway is evidence of that. And also, could it be possible that God shined on me and gave me the vision to redevelop my community, that the project was stolen, and all of those that are connected to that old leadership are benefiting and living by it today? But I would tell you, if you really give me the opportunity and respect, I could turn this city around in 2 years. All those that I sought after to talk to that avoided me, they can do it if they come together and listen to what God has given me and shown me this day. It's very important. I respect you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Madam Secretary.
Our next speaker is Cornelius Amin.
Thank you. I am Cornelius Amin. I stood in this position 2 weeks ago as a result of having read that Mayor Pro Tem Dwayne Carraway should give up his office. And I fight against poverty, crime, and injustice. Without having proved him guilty of having committed an offense, a violation of office, he is the mayor of Dallas in the absence of leopards to officiate or conduct business in his office. We had a lot of honorees come here for the Super Bowl, an MVP, most valuable player. And what was wrong with him as mayor to extend the key of freedom to the city? I studied on this. The city of Dallas, you say euthanized, I say killed over 30,000 dogs and cats a year. That's the Dallas City Shelter alone. Who's crying out about the Dallas City Shelter killing over 30,000 cats and dogs a year? Nobody. So was it the fact they killed dogs that he extended a key of redemption? And this is the origin, if I may, of freedom of key to the city. A proposed, a potential villain coming to a city, the leader of that city gave him a key, symbolizing your welcome to this city, in essence a contract that you keep the peace, laws and duties of the state, and we will respect you. But they left a man here scandalizing, libel. He has the right to file suit against anybody that has spoken out against him, because guess what? He's a city official, and he hasn't been proven guilty of committing or violating a duty of his office. That's what I wanted to say. But having come here for that reason, I found that there's a lot of other things wrong here. There's censorship. Not only is there censorship, there's a violation of citizen rights to protest the government, a petition, their grievances for redress. 3 minutes. I hope, having heard these rules, consideration of rules change, that these rules will be considered, and the people of Dallas will have an opportunity to truly come forth and let the city council know their grievances for redress. Thank you, and God bless you all.
Thank you very much. Madam Secretary, please.
Juanita Wallace.
Good morning. Juanita Wallace, 1409 South Lamar, Dallas, Texas, to our new mayor, and I appreciate him being our new mayor. To our city council people, I want to say to you, we have no permanent enemies, we have no permanent friends, but we have permanent issues. And I'm here once again, and will be here, to talk to you about
an unappreciated mandate that you bestowed on ATO. Now, I've spoken to some of you on the City Council, and hopefully you at this point will work to make sure that you do the right thing. The plan recommends eliminating the current city initiative that allows compressed natural gas powered car taps to move to the head of the line. We had two wonderful young ladies speak this morning about the hazards of compressed natural gas or natural gas drilling. We know that fracking actually does pollute not only the water, but the air as well as the soil. And if you're recommending compressed natural gas, how are you going to get it unless you do the fracking? And to do that, it's absolutely ludicrous, and not only it's absolutely harmful to the community and to yourself. Please join us in standing up against an unreasonable special interest policy pushed through by the earlier mayor and city council members for the yellow cab. That's what it's all about. It's all about greed, and it's all about special interest. We need you to look at this item again. We need you to address it again, and I thank you very much for any one of you that have spoken to me about this. At least you had the mitigating gall to talk about it openly, and if no other reason, thank you for just being city council people. But your obligation is to address the issue. And right now, the cab drivers are not here today. I have to stand here because I'm retired. But they're not here today because they have to try to work and work and work. Some of them actually have gone on welfare. They're eating at the different places where you get free food. We don't need this kind of image in our city. And I've come from another city, but I still consider this my home because I've been here for 25 years. So I say to you, do the right thing. Help these cab drivers be able. And I know it's too many of them, so stop it. Don't let anybody else apply. But the bottom line, the ones that you allow to apply, help them to be able to make a fair living. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Madam Secretary.
Mr. Mayor, our last speaker is Leslie Allen Davis and Wayne Wooten. I don't see either of them in the audience.
All right, thank you. It is now 10:05, March 2nd. 11:05, March 2nd, 2011, Dallas City Council will go into closed session under Section 551-071 of the State of Texas Open Meeting Act to receive the advice from the consultants of, with our city attorney on the following matters, Marcia Trevo versus the City of Dallas. We will meet here in this room and then we'll convene for lunch and we'll come back and dismiss. We're not in executive session. Thank you.